Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Every day is filled with opportunities to express yourself, and with an everyday piece from Blue Nile, you can do it without saying a word. Blue Nile's collection of diamond jewelry is the ultimate statement, with sparkle that elevates any outfit. Or switch things up with a sapphire piece sure to spark conversation. Either way, their diamond guarantee ensures you get the highest quality at the best price. Express yourself with Blue Nile, the original online jeweler, at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
A personal hygiene question.
Okay.
I thought you might be the right person to ask about this one. But, you know, as summer is approaching,
sure.
Which it isn't really, but, you know, I'm in Sydney and, you know, it starts to get warmer around August. Uh-huh. I usually start to get a bit sweatier, and that's about when I get out the clippers and decide it's time to, you know, trim the back hairs a little bit. But this year, what I, you know, instead of getting the clippers out, I thought I'd opt for the first time for some Nair. Have you ever used this stuff?
Okay. There are going to be people listening who are like, yeah, Nair is fantastic. And I think Nair is fantastic for certain people.
Mm.
Personally, I think Nair smells horrific and I hate it.
Yeah.
And I think it leaves your skin smelling really funny straight away when you first use it.
Yeah.
I was with this guy once and he used Nair on his balls. And I just remember thinking, that is so unappealing. And also, I imagine it would tingle and sting. So I personally would probably not use Nair all over my back if I were you. I would probably go and get laser.
And what's the laser? Like, I'm a bit scared of lasers, I think.
It's brilliant.
Do they blow up the moon in all the things I've seen?
I mean, look, I think to myself, oh, well, you know, if in 20 years' time they figure out that actually laser hair removal was really bad for us, I guess everybody, a lot of people I know anyway, are probably going to be in the same boat, so it's fine. But laser hair removal is so good. People, if you're out there listening and you've had laser hair removal, totally slip into our DMs on Instagram or let us know in the comments.
Don't send photos,
about your
though, please.
Laser hair removal experiences. It's so good. I will tell you also, it is super liberating. You know, if you can, and ladies listening will appreciate this, if, you know, you can be on, you know, a sort of a stretcher bed in a white room, you know, just sort of adjacent to a food court in a local shopping center with your legs akimbo, spread eagled, and some woman.
Or a stormtrooper or something, yeah.
Laser zapping your asshole or your lady bits. I think you're pretty much okay for anything that life's going to throw at you.
Great. And with that, here's the theme song. Can you feel it? Oh, yeah.
Roll up, roll up, roll up. We're here for episode 3 of Fruity Alexia.
And who are you again?
Who am I again? Yeah. I'm Alexander.
And
who are you?
Well, I believe I'm Alex.
Today, for $20, I'll be whoever you want me to be.
You know what? I'm concerned for your safety at the moment.
Why?
Does the name Jack Rabbit Photography mean anything to you?
No, but I'm really nervous that you're going to tell me that it should, and that's going to be really worrying.
What if I was to say it was run by one of our favourite contestants who happens to have a floaty scarf and it's right near where you live?
Piss off. Are you joking?
No.
Nope. Oh, no.
It actually looks quite good. I mean, there's, you know, there's like Billabong products. Like she does photo shoots for proper brands and stuff. You know, I think she's doing quite well for herself.
Do you know what? As a singer, she's a fantastic photographer.
I thought I'd sort of just bring that up actually because, you know, just wanted to reiterate, I'm in Sydney, you're in Brisbane, and we're doing this all over Zoom, and it's, you know, it's quite a nice thing for us to do because, you know, we've been friends for so long and it's sort of forcing us to, you know, actually talk to each other rather than just sending little messages.
It's true. It's nice to have the excuse to see each other every week actually because, you know, I think, I mean, irrespective of it being lockdown or being COVID times, it is nice just to have an excuse to speak to somebody that you have known for so long, especially, you know, somebody that knows where all the skeletons are buried. And of course, I refer specifically to my skeletons because you don't have any. I've got enough for the both of us.
And I'm going to be revealing them one by one every episode.
Every episode from now on, we're going to, we're going to reveal one skeleton per episode.
Something I really like about podcasts actually is that it's a bit like sitting with a friend and listening to them chat. But there's always this sort of barrier when you can't actually remember who is who at the beginning while you're still learning whose voice is whose. So I've come up with this little rhyme that I thought I'd delight you with.
And I can't wait.
So it is, you're Alexander, your voice is deeper and grander, and I'm Alex Hui, who sounds like a small boy. What do you think of it?
I think people out there have just really, now they have a full 360-degree picture of the type of fume that I've had to experience all these years, and they freely understand that you are, in a young man's body, just a stack of dad jokes. But I appreciate that nonetheless. Alex Hui, small boy.
It almost rhymes. Anyway, I thought I was very proud of that.
Yeah, you should be. Go you.
Yeah. And we've sort of done a good summary of who I am because there's not much really to go on over the last few episodes. But we, you know, when was the last time you were actively an actor and what's been happening since?
Back in 1842, I think, was my last gig. Actually, it was a long time ago.
When Columbus sailed the ocean blue.
Yeah, actually, I was performing on his ship. Right. I was the onboard cruise ship entertainment. No, do you know what I unintentionally forever paused my career in acting and entertainment probably about 10 years ago now when I was, maybe a bit longer. When I was 24, I just kind of realized that, you know, you have to kind of, I guess, be able to pay the bills and pay the rent and kind of have another string to your bow. And it's great to pursue your passion. And I'm not discrediting or discounting that, but it's another reality when you have to pay the bills. So I always worked in retail and worked in fashion or beauty, or, you know, I was one of the perfume spritzers at Meyer and David Jones in Melbourne. I'd chase people around with a bottle of perfume trying to spray them.
I got so much free perfume from you that I never used too.
I know. So many people got so many good free things from me, so much good free swag. But it was a good time, and like I did all that to, you know, because it was pretty flexible and I could go to auditions or go to voiceovers and all that kind of thing. And that was really fun. I really loved it. And I think at just one point I kind of realized, you know, I really needed to get serious, really. And I did think I'd go back to it. And sometimes now, actually, I kind of do think about it. Maybe I should go back to it, or maybe I should think about it again. But I don't know. I guess it gets hard. I suppose in a way it gets harder and harder every year to kind of realistically go, yeah, I'm going to put myself out there and I'm going to give it a crack again. But I don't know. Never say never. Who knows? This could be the start of a whole new thing for Idiot Alexia. You know, perhaps this will be where somebody goes, listen, Alexander, we need a middle-aged, bearded, bald gay man to be in something.
Yeah, we need someone to host the 2 a.m. FM radio chat show.
You know what? Somebody's got to do it. All right, so a quick recap of episode 3. This week, the top 25 girls are flown to Sydney for a week's intensive auditions, which is really like a boot camp, vocals and dancing and lots of group work. Some of the girls, it's their first time in Sydney, their first trip to Sydney. You see them referencing the Sydney Harbour Bridge. Oh, my gosh, look over there. You know, and you see them look at a big poster for Fame, the musical. They're all very excited. They've got their Kodak disposable cameras hanging out the side of a van, snapping pictures left, right and centre. Oh, my gosh, look at that. Oh, we have to come back there. You know, they're doing dance rehearsals with choreographer Anna Kyprios, and they're doing some vocal coaching with Mark Williams, group singing. They've sort of been divided up into five-piece girl bands in this big Sydney sort of town hall of some kind. I don't know, some kind of little town hall in some Sydney suburb. I don't know. It looks grotty and grungy, somewhere like Newtown or something. And basically they divvy everybody up and they say, okay, we're going to sing Don't Leave Me This Way. And everyone kind of has to practice it and do a dance to it and do the harmonies to it and all that kind of thing. And we do get a good look at some of the girls who go on to be in Bardo in this episode, particularly on day two of the audition where they cull the 25 girls down to 19. And it all comes to a crashing end for six girls whose, quote, dreams have been shattered, according to the narrator. So that's pretty much episode three.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with Plush Care. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Right. Alexia.
It's pretty wild, I have to say, whenever I hear the sting or whenever I hear the theme song and I realize, gee, that sounds like me. And then I'm like, oh, wait, it is me.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we haven't really discussed, but I'm probably going to, you know, we're going 50-50 with whatever money we make from the podcast, but, you know, except, you know, because I made the music, I'm going to skim a little bit off the top.
And I think it's only fair.
Yeah, even though you have provided a vocal performance.
I've provided the vocal stylings. So if anybody out there is listening, any record producers listening, if you're looking for somebody to produce a record for you, Alex is your man. If you're looking for somebody to whisper in a very sensual gay way across the top of something, I'm your man.
And the best thing about it is, you know, if I produce it, I'll also be able to, you know, screw over the artist who's doing it and not give them any royalties. So.
As is the case here. That's fine. Proven. No worries.
All right. We've talked about all sorts of things already. I guess we should actually start talking about this episode.
Probably. So what I thought was really funny is the very, very beginning of the episode, Michael Napthalai, you know, and Jackie O and Chris Moss, they're all kind of arriving, and you see kind of the girls arriving at the airport and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, Michael Napthalai looks down the barrel of the camera at one point, very, very early on, like maybe a minute and a half, 2 minutes into the episode. And he just says outright, I don't know that these girls have any idea what they've gotten themselves into, which is just such a strange thing to me to think like it. And it's said in a much more negative way than I have just retold it to you. It's really strange.
He's such a negative Nancy too. Like they go to the cocktail party, which is, you know, a weird thing in itself. And then, I mean, what's he saying? I can't remember. He's like...
Yeah, he goes, he sort of says to them all. So, okay, so on the first night, just for those of you, if you haven't watched the episode yet, go watch it on YouTube. But Yeah, so the first night all the girls go to a cocktail party. It's in this weird, like, empty restaurant. It looks like they're only going to get, like, one canapé each and, like, a half glass of house red or house white wine. And
even then, they're all just drinking water, right?
Yeah, they're all just drinking water, really, by the end of it. It looks like they're all just drinking sort of half glass wine glasses, half filled with water. And Mark Knapfly kind of gets up and does a bit of a speech, and he sort of says something to the effect of, you know, well, we're all having a lot of fun, but I have to be very honest with you and say that, you know, this whole process is about finding five girls, like as if, like, only five of you, like, we're only really caring about the five we find, so don't get too comfy. Don't enjoy yourself too much. It's great to have
some
fun.
Don't get used to this fancy water at the top of a hotel. You know?
That's right. You're going to get packed off home soon enough.
Yeah.
And, of course, Chris Moss, there's a quick scene with him. We can't have an episode of Pop Stars without Chris Moss commenting on Cherry Weston Pierce's tongue piercing. So he grabs her and sort of says to her, oh, where was it? Where was it? And she sticks her tongue out and goes, oh, there, and points to where the hole was on her tongue. And he's kind of like, oh, you can't even see it. And she's like, yeah, nah, it's closed over. And you just think, oh, that poor little girl.
And meanwhile, Chris has been drinking all the alcohol that the girls aren't drinking because they're too worried about being drunk for the audition the next day.
It's so funny, though, watching them all, because they've obviously gone up to this, like, party. They thought that it was some kind of, like, you know, industry bigwig party. You can see they've all got extra silver eyeshadow on, and they're really quite glam with their hair, and they're really excited for it. And they get up there, and then it's just like a complete fizzer in a huge empty restaurant with white tablecloth covered tables everywhere, but nothing else on them. Nobody, as far as the eye can see. And then they get this shitty speech from Michael Nathalie. A couple of them get accosted by Jackie O and Chris Moss, and then probably home to bed.
Yeah, it looked pretty depressing. But actually, you know, there are some things, I've been to things like that before where you're just like, this is so, it's just for show. And if you look too closely at the edges, then, you know, it's just one big, you know, media hype thing. Like, I went to the opening of some Korean restaurant at the Hilton in London once, which, like, if I put that on paper, it sounds really fancy. But the reality of it was, you know, they had like one little tiny snack for everybody. And, you know, everyone stood around. They moved all the tables and chairs out of the way. Nobody knew each other, so people were there talking to the one person they turned up with. And they did, like, one thing that happened was they broke open this sake barrel, and then everyone was told to leave. And it was really boring, slightly depressing. And
I've
gone to the trouble of ironing a shirt for it. So. And then the rest of the episode, as you were saying, it's like mostly in this big, like, church hall or town hall, in, you know, the inner west in Sydney somewhere. And they're starting, finally, I mean, for us talking on this podcast, we don't have to just keep talking about the judges being, you know, Chris Moss, Michael and Jackie O. We're getting a few new faces. Mm-hmm. So they've got this amazing choreographer in there who's got this very – actually, I looked her up on LinkedIn. She's got an impressive CV.
She does.
She was like the tour manager for Jackson Mendoza, who I can't remember who that is, but I know.
Oh, I do. I have their thing, their CV.
Another one you might have is Five, that she was the tour manager for. And, of course, the Venga Boys. Have you got the hat trick?
Oh, have I got the hat trick? Of course I have. Amazing.
And it looks like actually later on she went on to be tour manager for Bardo as well. But yeah,
for their tour,
I'm not quite sure what she's doing now. But I'm sure, you know, she seems like she's really good at what she does. So
I just did a bit of a website stalk of her. And she's an artistic director for a whole bunch of different brands. And I think she's doing corporate stuff. And again, her humble beginnings to us anyways, viewers, off she's gone now to the dizzying heights of corporate superstardom. You know who else makes an appearance in this episode?
Are you talking about Marsha?
Yeah, Marsha. The one, the only, Marsha Hines.
Exactly. And this is what was she a judge on? She was a judge on Australian Idol for ages. And so, you know, this is her getting her first little taste of being, you know, a judge, I guess.
Yeah. It's very strange though, because, you know, they basically sit all the girls down and somebody says to them, look, we've got an exciting surprise for you. Somebody's come to visit, sort of thing. They really hype it up.
Yeah.
And then out walks Marsha Hines, who, I mean, on the show,
they're thinking it's like Sporty Spice is about to turn up, right? You know?
Yeah. And then Marsha Hines walks out.
Not that Marsha's not.
Marsha Hines is great. We love Marsha Hines, but she walks out and it seems like on the episode anyway, she's there for a hot second. She sort of smiles and tells them all how exciting it is and how great they are. And then she kind of disappears again, speaks to the camera for a second and leaves. And it's sort of a little quick snippet. And I think this was like 3 years maybe before Australian Idol happened. I'm like, Marsha Hines kind of a big deal. Probably should have had a little bit more screen time, but I don't know. Maybe it was left on the cutting room floor.
And then this guy, haven't really clocked Mark Williams, who's their vocal coach. He's coming in, and you know, he's on the piano and he's helping them, you know, lift their voices and getting them to sing harmonies and stuff like that. And again, didn't really know who he was. Looked like he was a huge star back in the 80s, sort of like a New Zealand version of Lionel Richie. And, you know, again, this episode, just the judges, because at the end they're sort of, you know, telling the contestants who's made it and who hasn't. And the production values are still just so dodgy. Like, they're sitting right in the middle of this hall at this small school desk.
Yes,
horrible molded plastic stackable school chairs that I think we had at high school. And, you know, they're making the contestants walk from like 30 meters away in the distance on camera. It's just like this awkward long walk up as they find out.
Dump. I mean, this is the other thing about this hall. It's an absolute dump. You get a couple of scenes of like the carpet, a couple of shots of like the carpet and some hallways, and all the paint is kind of shitty and chipped. There's scaffolding and there's ladders in the corner.
I've been in a few rehearsal rooms over my years, and they're all exactly like this. They're these old freezing halls, and there are these gas heaters that are like far too high up the wall that, you know, you turn them on and all the dancers in the room start getting burnt and ask them to be turned off.
Yeah.
And then you turn them off and all the people who are sitting at like the production desks are freezing, and so they want it turned on, and there's dust everywhere, and the hot water doesn't work, and the toilets smell of, you know, urinal cakes, and, you know, it's this glamorous life of, you know, theatre and the arts that I always dreamed of. Yeah.
Yeah. It's so true. And there's, by the end of the day, there's, you know, miscellaneous pages from various different people's scripts and sheets of music sort of strewn around the floor.
Someone's left their hoodie behind. Do you know the good thing about it is, and this is just a really quick sidebar, is they are always near really good food outlets. So it's not all bad. I think that one is actually next to Newtown Station, I think.
Oh, was it really Newtown? I
think
a guess.
It is. Yeah, yeah. I think I'm kind of semi-familiar with it. And, you know, the Performing Arts School, McDonald College is right there as well.
That makes sense.
But plenty of good food around there. So, you know, if you're freezing in a rehearsal room, never mind, because there's a good sausage roll only 3 meters away. And then, we've got our wonderful contestants. Now, tell us about the clip of the contestant who's holding B1 at the airport.
Ah, okay. What a sign of the times this particular scene is. So at the very beginning of the episode, all the girls are arriving at the airport, and clearly they've just sent one camera crew out there to kind of greet whoever happens to be appearing or arriving at this time. There's a whole bunch of them arriving, and one of the girls is holding a B1, like bananas and pajamas B1, and she says something to the effect of, you know, oh, this is B1. I don't have B2 because he's gay and I don't like him. It's something like that.
Yeah. I didn't know what to make of it. Like, A, the fact that she said it, and B, the fact that the producers left it in the edit of the show.
I couldn't believe it.
And it was like a little highlight in the highlight package at the beginning.
Yeah, it was like this was only 21 years ago that this and this was allowed to be aired. This was put in the show by the producers. They thought it was okay. They thought that nobody would be offended. They thought it was funny. It's absolutely gobsmacking to watch it back now. I was like, wow. And to think at that time, that was like young people's kind of sense of humor. That was what they thought. I mean, I guess it's true, but it's just like, it's pretty, pretty gross. It's pretty on the nose. Oh, God. And then there's that other one. Oh, straight after that, there's that other girl, that absolute desperado who accosts Katie Underwood at the airport.
Oh, the one, she kind of gets Katie Underwood in a headlock, basically, you know, and Katie's pretending that
she grabs Katie Underwood and she looks straight down the barrel of the camera while she's kind of scruffing Katie Underwood like she's got her in a headlock. She's like, this is my best friend. This is my best friend from Adelaide. And Katie Underwood's like, whoa, Nelly, whoa. And she's just like fully committed to this, like, Katie Underwood, you are my best friend. And it's like, babe, do you already get the hint that Katie Underwood's going to be a star? Because I feel like maybe you do.
I felt that too. It was like, yeah, she definitely like latched onto Katie going, you know, if I hang on to her, then, you know, they'll pair us together in the final group. And, you know, you do get the feeling they were like friends in choir in high school and then they've parted ways.
Well, friends, I don't know if that's a strong word. Friends in inverted commas. And, you know, Katie Underwood's kind of, she's got this amazing politician's face on where she's like smiling kind of like, yeah, like through her smile. Like she's like, like it's so awkward.
Put me down, please.
Yeah, it's so strange. But I mean, go her.
And then there's this old guy sort of chatting up a couple of the contestants.
You mean Barry Crocker. Australian entertainment legend Barry Crocker. For those of you who don't know, go Google Barry Crocker. Although I suspect there's probably not much on Google about Barry Crocker, which is a shame. And I love that Sophie, he's sort of chatting up Sophie and talking about his daughter and talking about some whatever sort of, you know, mundane stuff. And then he kind of walks off and says good luck and walks off. And then obviously the producer or cameraman kind of goes, do you know who that is? And she's like, yeah, no, I don't. And he's like, Barry Crocker. She's like, oh, yeah.
Really awkward. But in fairness, it's not like it's Bono or, you know, Prince Charles or Daryl Summers or someone like that. It was like...
That was such an unexpected laugh when you threw out Bono, Prince Charles and Daryl Summers, that would have been such a pop in the microphone that that's going to be really hard for you to edit out later on. But if you're going to throw Daryl Summers in,
I'll leave it in just for the listeners.
I'm going to need more of a...
Well, lest we forget, this was 1999. But, you know, Barry Crocker, I didn't really know who he was either, in fairness to Sophie. You know, I'd sort of pieced together that he was Barry McKenzie. Sure. Back in the day, and I really like, he's one of those people that I really hate because, you know, when I was over in the UK, people have this idea of Australians based on people like Barry McKenzie, where they think we all go around saying, oh, pommy bastards and drinking Fosters and calling women Sheilas. And then, you know, Paul Hogan comes along and confirms the stereotype, and then Steve Irwin, you know, may rest in peace, of course, perpetuates it. And this is, you know, this is the image that everyone else has of Australia, whereas, you know, really, we're just, you know, normal people, just like everyone else.
Well, I don't know. Are we really, though? I mean, I think maybe that's just the image that's presented to the rest of the world. I don't know that it's necessarily untrue for some parts of the country.
Yeah.
Just quietly.
Maybe the bit you're in.
But I think maybe we've got a better...
We sip lattes around here where I am.
Oh, of course. And you have avocado on toast.
Anyway, where was I? I started talking about Paul Hogan and Steve Irwin when really we were trying to concentrate on the contestants. And, you know, I think we've already talked about Cherry, but she's, you know, I think one of our favourites at this point. And they're sort of, I can't remember if it's in the narration or something like that, but they're saying, Cherry gave up a lot to be here, including a tongue piercing. And I sort of thought, no, she didn't. She got a flight to Sydney from, you know, wherever she was and spent 3 minutes in a tattoo parlour getting her bolt removed.
Which, of course, let's be honest. They only made her do that for the show. So it's not, they just hyped it up because they were so thin on the ground with storylines. They made her go and get it removed in her tattoo parlor. I mean, it's all, bless them. I don't know if like the editors thought maybe Cherry was going to go far or something because it feels like they feature so much. You know, she's in the beginning of this episode, for example. You know, it's all about, you know, the narrator sort of, you know, makes reference to it being some of the girls' first time to Sydney, and he even calls out Cherry as it being one of her first times, I think, away from home or in Sydney. Right, and there she is. She's the one that you can see with her little Kodak instant camera hanging out of the window of a van, taking photos of things, winding the film on, taking photos.
Yeah, that's
right.
It's
really cute, but it's a lot.
Yeah, I love that they're driving through the cross as well because – I don't know, I didn't come to Sydney till I was like 18 or 19, so it was a couple of years after that. But even then, the cross was a bit terrifying. It's not exactly like the tourist spot where you take people through. Like I think that Heath Ledger movie, Two Hands, was all about all the crime and stuff that went down in the cross around that time. You know? And here's poor little Cherry with her wind-up camera, you know, taking photos of the people slumped on the street corners. We don't have that back in the country. Yeah, poor Cherry. And I think she does get through this episode, I think.
She does get through this episode.
Yeah, but clearly she's so nervous. Yeah. Like she's like, should I throw up now or throw up later? You know, which I really, you know, when they're telling her.
You can relate to.
Yeah, I can really relate to that feeling. Just that, I just feel so sick. And I'm sure like absolutely everybody's nervous as well. I think even, you know, the people that we know end up getting into the band, they're probably wetting themselves as well, you know, figuratively speaking.
Yeah, I mean, I think probably, I mean, you'd be natural, right? If you weren't nervous, it would be weird.
Yeah, and I don't think it's something performers ever really get over either.
I think you get better at coping with it maybe.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how, it's just a strange way to live, I think, where you're just spending your, I mean, you must love it, but spending your whole life just I don't know, I think a lot of it happens backstage, standing there so nervous that you're going to puke and then force yourself to walk out in front of an audience and do something that's actually pretty outrageous, like pretend to be someone else and say your lines or sing a song that you've been practicing for ages. And God,
it's a wild rush. It's a weird wild rush because you're so terrified and nervous before you actually step out on stage or, you know, start your audition or whatever. And then, you know, so you're kind of driven, completely consumed and driven by adrenaline and nerves. But then when you get out, you're kind of released of it, you know, because once you're out there in front of people, it's just too late, too bad. You just got to go for it. And I think that's sort of, that's the difference between people that, you know, pursue careers in entertainment and people that don't, I think.
And maybe some people are a bit stuck in it too, because, you know, you've done all this, you've either done a bunch of training or you've gone, you know, I'm going to be an actor. And then maybe, you know, say 5 to 10 years in, you find out it's not for you. You can't suddenly, it's very hard to go back and do an accounting or psychology degree or something after that. I don't know.
Totally. Yeah. Don't I know it? Anyway. But I mean, gosh, I was not expecting that when I was kicked out of Bard Ho that I was going to have to worry about finding a job in accounting.
It's the natural progression though, isn't it?
It's pretty much.
Yeah. So we see a few of the contestants that make it in. They do sort of They do start to zone in a little bit more on Tiffany Wood at this point. So they, I think there's even this little random bit that's cut into the show that almost doesn't even make any sense. They sort of
definitely is.
And you know, the local Sydney girls, including Tiffany Wood, and they just have this like tiny little grab of her just walking, which doesn't really make any sense to the narrative. But my suspicion is by this point they've realized that she's going to be in the final band.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I thought that too. I thought it's weird because they kind of go through all the girls, different girls arriving, and they don't really pinpoint anybody as such. And then they make the narrator makes a point of, you know, Tiffany's kind of dragging a suitcase across the foyer and she sort of smiles at the camera and kind of nods and all of that. And the narrator kind of says something like, you know, local Sydney girl, Tiffany Wood. And it's this weird kind of being singled out moment. And I think you're absolutely right. I assume that by the time this was edited or put together, they were like, oh, shit, we're going to need to retrospectively add in more Tiffany content because we're going to need it because we're going to bring her in to by the whatever episode it is that they need her.
Yeah, quick gather every single bit of footage you have of her. We've only got one of her wheeling a suitcase.
That'll do. Let's use it.
And, you know, of course, Katie, there's this sweeping shot at the beginning even, and it's just like 2 seconds, like not even that, of the whole group dancing. And for some reason, because like her dancing's just so sharp and on point and energetic that she's really sticks out in the group anyway, you know. That X Factor we were talking about, Katie Underwood.
Oh, Katie Underwood.
Yeah.
I mean, she's amazing.
Yeah.
I don't know why they refer to her as, I think the narrator says, you know, she's really surprised everybody with her dancing. Well, she didn't have the strongest voice, but she's improved at every audition, which it blows my mind. I still can't understand, are these people watching the same show that we're watching? It's like the Dorothy Katooba is nervous, has no confidence thing. It's like Katie Wood has no, you know, is not, sorry, Katie Underwood gets better every time. It's like she actually is great every time. It's so strange.
I think there's just maybe I think they've gone to film it and maybe there's less interesting stuff happening than they assumed. Like it's really just, you know, some people singing and dancing and there's no like, I don't know, I can't remember which reality show I was watching, maybe The Voice or something or recently, and, you know, all the contestants have this massive backstory, you know, I was born under a volcano and raised by wolves and then the guitar case was handed to me on a crossroads at midnight sort of thing.
Yeah.
Whereas there's none of that. It's sort of, you know, a bunch of sort of average Australians that have had a reasonable education, which included singing and dance classes, who thought they'd turn up to a new idea audition, you know.
I think you're absolutely right. And it's funny because, you know, we watch it back, obviously, having seen all of those subsequent iterations of music reality television, Idol and Got Talent and X Factor and The Voice and all the other different versions of music reality television programs. And, you know, I guess this was the precursor for all of that, really, because they really didn't have a clue what they were doing. And in a way, it's really, like we said before, it's a documentary. It feels more like a documentary. Who else did you notice out of the band?
Well, I mean, they're all there. They all turned up, which is, I guess, why they got through. So all those people that didn't turn up, you didn't see a single one of them in Bardo at the end. I mean, you can see Belinda's there and she must have a, you know, a dance background because she's just got the, you know, that smile that's sort of plastered on your face and no matter what's happening.
You can tell Belinda's done a rock of Stedford, that's for sure.
Exactly, yeah. You're out of breath, but you still just keep that smile going.
Yeah. She's a pro. You can tell she's a pro because she gets so much more camera time and they reference, you know, 24-year-old Belinda Chappell, you know, she's had a career as a model and all this other stuff. And
you
can tell that she's just got that, as you say, that kind of polished kind of smile and she's ready to go. She's on point, off she goes.
And even, I don't know how long they've been rehearsing for, but say it's like 8 hours of dance rehearsals or something in a day. Somehow she's managed to keep on like this makeup that she's done that looks like she's just like stepped out of an editorial shoot, you know?
Yeah.
Like, does she not sweat at all?
That's right. Her makeup's just perfect. It's really, she looks great. It's so funny because she does look so much more composed than the others.
Yeah, that's true. And you sort of don't really see that much of her in the first few episodes. So it's nice to actually sort of get a bit of a, you know, a feel for her personality a bit more in this one, even if it's fleeting, you know.
Well, that's actually what I thought too, watching this episode. I was thinking, you know, obviously we know who ends up in the band and you know, all of that. But I was kind of watching this episode thinking, oh, it's really nice to get a bit more of each of the girls who we know get in, because soon we're just going to be seeing them every episode. So we're going to get to kind of be reintroduced to these young girls who have gone on to win the competition and be in the group and have their career and all that kind of thing. We get to see Sally for the first time really properly. I mean, we saw a snippet of her in the first episode, a snippet of her in the second episode. They weren't really very good snippets. They weren't probably the most flattering shots or bits of footage of her.
Yeah.
You know, she's only 23, but she gets a lot more camera time in this one. She's a great dancer. And I think they speak to her at some point, and, you know, she sort of says, she refers to it, this whole experience as being, you know, feeling like home to me. And I think that's
right. Just,
it's nice to get a bit more of her knowing that she goes on to be in the band as well. And, you know, having seen that she's been referenced already, it's really about time.
And she's got the whole sort of sporty Spice vibe down pat. I think she's really pitching for that. And she's like, you know how I was saying that long walk up to the judges' table in the hall? She's one of the people that actually doesn't look awkward while she's doing it. She's very confident. She comes, she sits down, she's sort of talking to them as if they're, you know, people and not, you know, up on this pedestal, I think. And yeah, she's just got this, you can sort of see at this point, you know, there's a confidence there that is really going to make you stand out from other people, I think.
Yeah, and you can see, I think you can see from that conversation between her and the judges as they've, you know, assessing her to her face, you can see that she's clearly really enjoyed the whole experience already anyway. You can, like, she kind of bounces up to the, to sit down, you know, walks that 30-kilometer walk and she bounces up and she sits down and they talk to her, how do you think you're going and how do you think you've gone today? And she says, you know, it feels like home to me, and she's really positive and she's got great energy. And you know, you can tell that, you know, she looks great, she's very attractive, can sing, all these different things.
Mm.
You're kind of like, yeah, I mean, if I were with them, I'd be thinking, oh, we hit the jackpot here with this one.
Yeah, and actually Katie's another one who does, she does a very confident walk up to the judges and then she sort of jumps onto the chair like it's kind of a cross between dancing and like she's talking to her basketball coach or something as well. Yeah, there's something just, yeah, you can really tell in the way people sort of approach the desk, I reckon. And actually Tiffany's a funny one with that because she's sort of a bit more coy, but they let her through.
She struts up to the to the desk and they speak to her and they say, look, great, you're going to be kept on and your voice is a little bit coarse today. Is there a reason? And she's got this croaky voice and she goes, yeah, I drank too much champagne. I drank 6 glasses of champagne last night, but don't worry, I'll be good tomorrow. Yeah.
And you know 6 means 12.
Yeah. And I love the reason, like I love that she managed to find 6 glasses of champagne in that empty cocktail party that they all went to. She's obviously gone out to a local bottle shop and bought something because there wasn't any of that party.
Yeah.
The party was in Tiffany's room that night.
I think. I reckon so too. Yeah.
Good on her. I would have too. Yeah. But then again, she was a local girl Tiffany would remember, so she probably wasn't put up in the hotel.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
She probably saved
the money.
She probably just, you know, cracked open a bottle of Fruity Lexia back at her house.
Oh, yum.
And drank it.
By herself.
6 glasses of it.
Yeah, she was just by herself all night. Yeah, with rage on. No.
Yeah.
I'm talking about myself now. Anyway. And then Sophie, I think I think everyone's singing Don't Leave Me This Way, aren't they? And Sophie does quite a good one, I reckon, because she's, you know, I think some people just sort of repeat what they've heard in the recording. Whereas I do feel like Sophie sort of sounds a bit more individual and like she's putting her own technique into it.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think Tiffany does the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think Tiffany's pretty great too with her. Well, they all really are actually. I think you can really start seeing they are really good.
And then, you know, a few people don't get in, I guess. So, you know, a few people rejected. It's only six, as you said earlier, which I thought was kind of like, you know, the maths of a reality show these days. Like,
get rid of heaps more.
Yeah.
Like chop out half of them.
Yeah, exactly.
Save yourself some pus and pain. But again, I guess it was so not prescriptive when they went into this. It was like, oh, well, I guess we'll just do it like a normal audition run and we'll just see how many people we chop out the first day, how many people we chop out the second day, that kind of a thing.
Yeah,
they just kind of wing it. That's what it feels like to me anyway.
And Danielle Stearman, who I think you talked a bit about her last episode, but she's the, you know, the B1 because B2 is gay, which I don't know.
Yeah, that's her.
To me, the bananas were quite androgynous. So, you know, anyway, that's a whole other podcast.
I don't know if I'd call a banana androgynous, but anyway, literally, you know, half of our audience is going to be like lolling at you thinking that, but anyway.
Yeah, she starts crying because she goes back. She gets told by the judges that she's not in, and then she goes back to the room where all the other contestants are sort of sitting, and she starts crying. And someone immediately to like calm her down hands her the B1, which I thought was quite cute.
I think she says something like, you know, oh, it's okay. I know that they've got a, you know, they're looking for a very specific thing. Is that what she says? Something like that. You know, she's pretty positive about it for a 19-year-old.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And little did she know she'd go on to marry Scott Cain of Australian Idol fame.
Listen, you're an idiot. She didn't marry Scott Cain. Firstly, Scott Cain it's not Scott Cain of Australian Idol fame. It's Scott Cain, winner of Series 3 Pop Stars fame.
Oh, right, yeah.
And she didn't marry him. She really? Didn't marry Scott Cain. No, of course she didn't marry Scott Cain. Scott Cain won and she came second.
Hang on, I bring to the table Exhibit A, the Wikipedia article on Scott Cain.
What does it say? Oh, did she didn't really marry him?
In 2002, and of course copyright Wikipedia maybe, in 2002, Scott Cain started dating fellow Pop Stars contestant Danielle Stearman. Stearman also provided her version of Superstition for the competition single and finished second in the contest. Blah, 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 blah. Cain and Stearman issued a duet album, Spiro, in 2009. In 2011, here we go, they got engaged and had a son. In 2015, they were married in Las Vegas and in 2017 had a daughter. Cain now has three children. The first was born when he was 19.
Blowing my mind. Is that true? I mean,
it's
I'm reading
Wikipedia
it.
Did you
edit this Wikipedia page?
I mean,
anybody could have done it. Scott Cain could have done it.
If I knew how to edit a Wikipedia page, then I would be right on it. But
I accidentally did it once.
Did you? Your own?
Yeah. not my
Just
own.
Just add in all your Tumblr links.
Somebody. Did he really? Wow, I did not know that. I mean, go them for getting married. I am surprised they got married.
Well,
I did not know that. I'm still not sure that it's true. It's on Wikipedia, so I don't know that we can 100%, you know.
Yeah, yeah. We need proof, you know.
Believe it. We do need proof. Yeah. Danielle Stearman or Scott Cain or family or friends thereof, if you're listening.
Which you definitely
do let
are.
Us know.
Yeah.
Which you definitely are. Do let us know
if
Wikipedia is correct.
And return my calls, please. we also have, is it Lisa O'Neill?
Sorry. Can I just stop this for a second? Sorry. This is so bad. I just had a look through. I thought, okay, I'm just going to check what Alex is saying here while we're recording.
Yeah.
So I've just gone onto Scott Cain's Wikipedia page. So I've seen all the bits you're talking about where he talked about his wife, Danielle Stearman, was a fellow contestant on Pop Stars.
Have I not read far enough?
No, you haven't read. Just can you open up your phone and have a look for me?
Yeah, I'm still on the page. Yeah.
So in like the highlights bit, just under, you know, they've got the first sort of paragraph about him, and then just scroll slightly down to where it says Scott Cain again. It's got some quick facts, and then look underneath occupations and read them from top to bottom for all the listeners out there.
Okay.
So from top to bottom, read them out.
So Scott Cain, singer, television presenter, entertainer, and furniture polisher. Without, there's not even a citation needed there, so it must be true.
He might have put that in himself.
Well, you know.
not that there's anything wrong with furniture polishers. No. It's a perfectly respectful trade, yeah. Respectable trade, but I just.
And I suspect it's both our career trajectories anyway. So.
I just wasn't expecting it.
Yep.
Singer, television presenter, entertainer, furniture polisher.
And then, of course, one of our other favourites of this episode is lovely Lisa O'Neill. And she's
so she's the girl. She's the girl that accosted Katie Underwood, right?
Oh, is she the same one? I can never, you know me. I've got no memory. So if there's a cut between shots, forget it.
No. That's a lie. I lied to you. Sorry. Louise is the girl who accosted Katie Underwood.
Oh, yeah.
Lisa O'Neill is that very sort of pretty blonde girl who is very sort of the time. You know, she's got the really blonde hair, the thin eyebrows, the really sort of, you know,
it's that look
lipstick.
That was popular back then where you'd sort of comb, you know, one bit of your parted hair over your eye. Yeah.
Yeah, one half of your hair. That's right. She was very, very of the time. Mm. That's right. So she's in the very beginning when she first arrives at the airport. You know, she's sort of crouching on the ground, grabbing her luggage, I think, and she sort of looks up at the camera and she goes, well, you know, something's going right because my baggage arrived. Then, you know, a little bit later, she's unpacking in a hotel and she's sort of grabbing this candle and she sort of points it to the screen. She goes, I've got my lucky candle here. So, you know, good, you know, got my lucky candle with me here. I don't go anywhere without it.
And hang on, if you're going to have a lucky item, you don't want it to be something that is going to burn down in 7 to 9 hours, do you?
I feel like it's a little bit of a ominous lucky item. Would, a bit of an oxymoron. I probably wouldn't.
It's foreshadowing her journey in the pop stars.
It is foreshadowing her journeys, which unfortunately in this episode
she snuffed
does
out.
Does come to an end. She is her journey is snuffed.
Hang on, snuff sounds bad. She's eliminated.
No, that doesn't sound great either. Okay. But her journey's come to an end in this episode of Pop Stars.
Yeah.
And I love it when this is one of the strange shots of the episode, and you can tell how kind of early it is in, like, reality television filming because, you know, in this case, the judges are kind of sitting in a row behind their little, you know, trestle table, and she's walked in, she's sitting down, and the camera is behind the judges, so you've kind of got their perspective looking right at her. She's sort of looking at the judges who are kind of under and off to the side under the camera.
Yeah.
So you can see that her eye line is looking at the judges as they're talking to her, who, you know, clearly they're mic'd up. So as the viewer, we're looking at her, watching them, but hearing their voice. And they kind of go through it and you know, it starts out and I think Chris Moss says to her, oh, how do you think you went today? And, you know, do you think you did a good job today or whatever? And she's going, yeah, I think I'll only get better with time or whatever. She's sort of really positive and bubbly and she just keeps chatting away and really positively. And then he just goes, the guy just goes, Chris Moss
heartbreaking,
goes, yeah.
Isn't it?
It is so heartbreaking. He goes, yeah, so we, and so she's smiling and nodding along the whole time.
Yeah.
And then Chris Moss, I think it is, just goes, you know, we're going to leave it there. We're going to say goodbye kind of thing. We're not going to take you through whatever he says.
Yeah.
And at the very second that he says it, her eyes look straight up and directly down the barrel of the camera.
Such this beautiful moment,
eyes.
Isn't it? Yeah.
Isn't it? Into your heart, into your soul as the viewer at home. And the narrator goes, Lisa's lucky candle didn't help. Which I just think, I can't believe they left a shot in where, you know, the fourth wall was broken.
It's
where
like
she
something out
of
the Office,
of the
like the original UK Office, sort of those cringy moments where suddenly everyone's aware that there's a camera crew there and you just have to style out this awful moment, you know.
Exactly. It's just so strange they left it in because they've left in nothing else where their fourth wall has been broken and then they leave this moment in. It's just fleeting.
Yeah.
But I rewatched it so many times because I just thought you can kind of see the joy and the optimism and the hope all just drain away from her face. And then the little bitchy jibe for the sarcastic jibe about the lucky candle not helping. I'm just like, oh, God, it's so fucking cruel.
And then my favorite bit is after, like, she goes, she leaves the judging room and goes back to the sort of green room where everyone else, all the other contestants are hanging out, and someone hands her the B1 as if that's going to settle her down too. As if this magic B1.
Well, she didn't have a lucky candle there, clearly.
Well, yeah. Although be careful, B1, because actually if you squint, you do kind of look like a candle, just saying. And then, of course, we say goodbye to our favourite Dorothy.
Oh, we do. It's time to say goodbye to Dorothy Gutuba.
Yeah.
Our friend. She gave us great television for a hot second.
She did,
on
didn't
Pop
she?
Stars. Yeah, and she was a treasure. And poor Dorothy, you know, she walks out having been sort of rejected and knocked back, and she walks back out to all the girls who are waiting, either having just gone in or are waiting to go in. And she just kind of goes out shaking her head and repeating over and over again, almost like a chant, "I wasn't confident. I wasn't confident."
Yeah.
You know, like, I wasn't confident. It's like this awful thing, you know, like that she's been told, I don't know. I mean, maybe we are reading too much into it because we love her, but I feel like she just keeps repeating this chant to all these poor girls, "I wasn't confident."
Yeah.
Poor thing.
Yeah, the poor thing. She's been told by these judges that she's not confident, and she's believing it in her heart, and that's not what we want from Dorothy.
But that's all right. As we say, she's having the last laugh now working for Netflix.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
She's thinking, she's sitting on her throne in Netflix office. She's thinking, fuck y'all.
She's got a dartboard of Chris Morris, and there's 12 darts that she's managed to get into the moustache that are still there. And then the episode, I think it sort of finishes with someone looking, you know, they're standing in front of the exit and they're going, you know, it's just one knockback out of how many before you get to the top. I won't give up. And she went on to be.
She did in Pop
Did she?
Tarts.
Oh, she did go on to be someone.
I think she did.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, I think she's one of the girls that went on to be in the spoof band Pop Tarts. Do you remember after the show finished?
I think that was because, you know, I was allowed to watch the ABC. So I think they were on Good News Week, if I recall.
They were. Yeah, Good News Week. Yeah, with Paul McDermott.
Yeah.
And she, I think, I could be wrong. I might be wrong. I've got to go for a Google before we get to that point.
Yeah.
But I think that's what she does.
Yeah, right.
And if she doesn't, anyway, she has a great attitude.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I wonder if she did give up.
Well, we can find out.
I mean, I know that you were probably thinking, well, she must have because we don't know who she is.
Yeah.
But
I was trying to be polite.
Maybe she hasn't given up yet.
Yeah, exactly.
21 years later, maybe she's still going.
Yeah, maybe she's doing an even better podcast than Fruity Alexia.
Maybe she is, but I doubt it because, let's be honest, is there a better podcast than Fruity Alexia?
What really hit me about this one was, the first trip to Sydney, you know, because I think we've talked before about Hobart and, you know, it was not exactly the most amazing place in the world to grow up. It was a lovely place to grow up. It's beautiful and picturesque, but it's, you know, there's sort of this feeling of, you know, we're down here in Tasmania and then there's the mainland. There's this amazing place.
Yeah, the mainland.
Not too far north, only an hour's Ansett flight away is the mainland.
Mythical place.
And, you know, we didn't travel that much. I think, you know, as a kid, we'd quite often get flown. We'd drive to Launceston, where the highlight is some monkeys randomly in the center of the town. There's this monkey park.
They've all got hepatitis.
Yeah, I think that's a rumor. I think the hepatitis thing is a rumor to put the locals off, like, jumping the fence in the night and having their way with the monkeys.
Oh, is it? Because there is a big sign. There's a sign on the inside of the thing saying the monkeys have hepatitis. They were a gift from some city, weren't they? They were a gift from They were a gift from some city in Asia somewhere.
Yeah.
As one of the sister programs, you know?
Yeah.
Can you imagine if you were some fabulous Asian city and your sister city
was Launceston.
Anywhere in the world. Could be anything, but you get Launceston.
Yeah.
Fuck, you'd have drawn a short straw.
I know. I mean, not to bag out Launceston too much, but I do remember going there, you know, even not that long ago, and at midday, you know, the town bell would ring and all the shops would close and everyone would go home.
Oh, you're such a bullshit
artist.
That's
true.
They didn't go
Saturday,
home. They all went out to try and find their meth.
Right, yeah. Anyway, it's very lovely now. It's changed a lot since, 2019 when I was last there.
Oh, did you go that recently?
No, I didn't really.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, but, you know, it's got a uni there and stuff now and an art school. Anyway, let's move on from Launceston. But, you know, going to Sydney, and my first job was actually, you know, in King's Cross.
Was it? Your first job was in King's Cross,
was
it, hey?
At this little theatre called The Stables. And, you know, I had a fairly beige upbringing, I suppose. And my first job, you know, at this theatre in King's Cross was to get out the, you know, the sharps bucket and the tongs and pick up any of the used syringes that had rolled under the door overnight.
Oh, joy of joy.
And then the second job was to shoo away the homeless alcoholic chap who I became quite friendly with, but he'd sit outside where the audience would have to enter. So I'd have to have a little chat with him and tell him to, you know, we've got people coming soon and they're going to have to walk where you're sitting. So do you want to find another spot? And that was my introduction to Sydney. So, again, it's built up in these shows as this big glamorous place, I think. You know, you're going to Sydney. But really, you know, it's just a city like any other.
Do you think it's it's built up now as a glamorous city, or do you think it was?
Because I think it was.
No offense to Sydney, and I mean, I realize as I say, no offense to Sydney. Mm. I don't really think now people around the country see it as this glamorous place.
No, I don't think so either. But you know, anytime if you want to show Australia for an international audience, you have a picture of Uluru, or you have a picture of the Harbour Bridge and the Opera House.
It's true. Yeah. It's totally true.
Whereas you sort of moved to Melbourne, like you were, it was for your grade 11 or something, wasn't it?
Yeah, I did grade 11 and grade 12 in Melbourne.
And did you sort of have the sense that you'd managed to escape out of Hobart, or was it just like, oh, I've moved house?
I think it was a combination of a lot of things. Like I moved to Melbourne when I was 16, so I was quite young. And, you know, we're talking about like, I don't know, 2001, so, or something like that. Yeah, 2001. And, you know, like it was still illegal to be gay until 1997 in Hobart, you know. So, I don't know, Hobart was not ever going to be a safe place, really, I don't think, for me. And as a teenager, and I certainly not just literally safe, but figuratively safe, you know, emotionally and all that kind of thing. So, I think, you know, moving to Melbourne, I don't know that it was a relief to be out of a small town into a big town. I actually just felt decompressed, maybe.
Right.
But yeah. I noticed that being in Melbourne was a totally different experience for me, because there were so many more people and it was obviously so much bigger, and there was a lot more shops and a lot more cafes and a lot more, you know,
it was a lot. Yeah.
But I felt, you know what, this is what I feel about my 10 years in Melbourne, you know, and I always did. I feel really grateful to Melbourne. That's always how I talk about it to people. Melbourne for 10 years was my home, and I feel very, very connected to the place still. And some of my closest friends, dearest friends, live there still. And I love going back there, but I really feel grateful to Melbourne and what it did for me in my confidence and my self-esteem and who I am today and who I've become. And you know, I felt like there was a lot of possibility and, you know, a lot of future in Melbourne for me at the time.
Alexia.
So I think this week's episode was quite a good one. You know, it was nice to sort of feel that excitement of, you know, moving to a big city again, I think. Was there anything else? Have we missed anything that you noticed?
Well, probably nothing about the actual episode itself. I really enjoyed the episode, and it made me really, really excited to watch more.
Yeah, like, I can't
so
wait.
Excited to watch more. I just remember feeling, I loved the show so much, and I'm so excited to see more of the actual girls that ultimately get in the band. But some things I did notice just upon the rewatch was, and the ability to, I guess, pause it, was some of the credits that I thought were quite interesting at the end of it, you know. If you ever, you know, want to take a trip down memory lane, pause the credits of a reality show 20 years later and then go and research the crew. Because it's super, super strange. So you think about all the music reality television shows we know now and how many camera people are required to do multi-camera shows like The Voice or X Factor or
like
whatever.
Like a big studio production sort of thing.
Like a big studio production. This episode of Popstars had one camera operator, which is wild.
Single camera is usually like something a bit more elite, isn't it? Like a feature film would be shot with a single camera, you know. Whereas in this situation, it just means one camera operator, because that's all we could afford, and we're having to cut all the footage together from this one guy's perspective.
Pretty much.
Who, if we remember, went into the women's toilets in the first episode.
And you can kind of imagine, you know, there's 25 girls, there's three judges, there's a choreographer, there's the video choreographer, there's the musical director. So there's, you know, I don't know, 30, at least 30 people that they've got to capture.
Yeah.
So you can imagine with one camera operator, there's no way that all of the juicy bits of television, potential television, were captured. But the other thing I noticed that was really strange was in the credits of the show, at the very end, they do the different musical credits, and they actually credit they mention Poison, which goes on to be the debut single for Bardo, and they also credit Empty Room, which is the B-side song to Poison on the CD single.
And boy, is it a B-side.
Boy, is it a B-side.
Yeah.
It sure is.
Are you a fan of it?
At the time, I loved it, and I think it was originally intended to be the debut single, I believe.
Right.
I might be wrong. I might be speaking at my ass, and maybe we'll find out that I am in episodes to come. But I think it was originally intended to be the debut single, and then they opted for Poison and this became a B-side. I could be so wrong. But yeah. In any case, I thought it was really strange that they were already in the credits of this episode. So I presume that they've done that because perhaps they were singing them in rehearsals or practicing them or whatever. And just in case they chose to use any of the footage, they've included it and then they just haven't taken it out.
Yeah.
I gather. I could be wrong.
And one of the things that I remembered watching this one was, you know, most reality TV shows ends with the winners, whereas this one, you get a whole story, like the winners are revealed halfway through the series and then you stick with what happens afterwards.
Yeah. I think the actual timeline of it all is quite strange.
Yeah.
And I think by the time we finish watching this series, I think we're going to I remember feeling a little bit kind of weird about the whole thing because it just I think the show, my memory serves me correctly, and I haven't watched ahead like you have. I've only watched up to where we're at. So I think that the actual series ends with their release of their second single and their second music video. I think that's sort of how it ends. So they've already released Poison, and there must be a couple more episodes of the series before they end.
Yeah.
So I think it's a bit of a weird trajectory that we go on.
There's probably a whole episode on them going around and doing signings at Westfields. And
there's definitely an episode of them going around to different Westfields, of course. There has to be.
Well, you've got all this to look forward to.
We do. And I can't wait to look. I can't wait to watch it. I'm so excited. This has just been the best thing. And I think that, you know, so many people have sent me text messages or, messages that have listened to the podcast already,
yeah.
And they're really enjoying being on the journey with us. And some of them have gone and watched the episode back or the episodes back on YouTube, which is really fun. And a lot of them are saying, oh, you know, I remember, you know, when you said this, I remembered that,
yeah.
or whatever. It is actually quite nice to kind of feel like you're striking a chord with people and you're kind of relating with people and some of the random things that you remember and your observations from 20 years ago.
Well, I mean, luckily I haven't remembered anything. So for me, it's like watching it afresh. And on that note, I think my medication's wearing off, so we'd better move on to the end. Okay, how do we finish this off?
We have an Instagram, so send us a DM, flop us a like. I think you probably meant to say flip us a like in that text, or no, did you just want to hear me say flop?
So just a little peek behind the curtain of Fruity Alexia HQ, but I write everything out on a teleprompter so we can remember a few of the points. And sometimes I just like to include things that I know Alexander won't want to say just to throw him off.
So, like flop,
so this
for
is
example.
What we've hit upon here.
Flop us a like. Yeah. So we have an Instagram. Send us a DM. Flop us a like.
Yeah, and make sure you follow the link in our description to our Acast support page. I mean, it's the best site on the internet, so it's worth visiting just to see that. It's our logo and a place where you can send us some money to support. And, yeah, shows are published every Friday, and we're doing little mini-sodes as well on Tuesdays at the moment.
And we haven't figured out what we're going to call those yet, have we?
No, we haven't. I mean, we did have a couple of ideas. So one was Dregs, I think. One was the Cast Offs. Mm-hmm. For me, the Cast Cast-off sounds a bit scatological, a word? Scattatorial?
I don't know what that means, but sure, let's go with
lavatorial?
It.
Does that get you any closer to what it means? Toilet.
Shit.
Yes. Cast?
Sounds a bit shit. No. Oh, you're not. Yuck. We don't do toilet humor.
No, we don't.
We don't do
really.
Literal toilet humor. No, we don't.
That's why I was trying to skirt around it with big words, but you're the one who said shit. Yeah. So I'm pointing the finger at you for that one.
Well, look, we do need to find out what we're going to call them. We need to decide what we're going to call our minisodes.
Yeah. I feel like there'll be a moment of clarity and we'll go, yes, that's what it is. And I'm hoping it comes from one of the listeners. All right. Well, I think that's probably enough for now. Any
yeah,
last thoughts?
I think
thoughts?
We're done.
No. I have no more thoughts.
No, I'm good.
I think I have no more thoughts left
I'm
in
all
me for today.
I'm all thought out. Yeah.
In that case, bye, everybody.
See you later. Can you feel it? Can you feel it? Can you feel it? Can you bubble woman down? Alexia.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us.
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.